everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Expert to Authority show. My name is Simone Vincenzi. I'm your host, and this is a show for coaches, speakers, and trainers who want to grow their businesses while making an impact in their world. And today, I have the privilege of speaking with a true legend in the world of online marketing and webinars. If you have been in the digital marketing space for any amount of time, you have actually likely heard his name. He has sold over 250 million worth of products to over 150,000 customers in 131 countries. And based on this strategic initiative, his company, Rapid Crush, holds the record for all-time biggest launch in the internet marketing space of $57.9 million, as well as the record for most commission generated as an affiliate in a product launch, 9.8 million in 8 days. Jason is also the only marketer that Zoom brought in to teach its user base on how to create high-converting webinars. And today we are going to really have a conversation on what takes to get from a webinar that is good to great, from good conversions to great conversions. So grab a notebook, get comfortable, and let's dive in this great conversation with the one and only Jason Vladlian. Jason, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be there. Those are some really big numbers too.
Yeah, they are yours.
It's hard to believe, yeah.
And they are all yours. So I'd love to start a conversation now about how have you seen the world of webinar changing? Because you've been in the webinar game for many years, and the webinar game has evolved over the years. Yeah. So what do you see the state of the webinar industry now compared to what it was before? Let's start from this part.
It's a great question. Yeah, I liken it a lot to YouTube. So YouTube is harder to do right these days. Like, you can't just throw webcam videos out there and have, you know, not so great titles and thumbnails. But if you do YouTube really well, you can reach more people than ever before. And webinars are like that too. Gone are the days where you could sleepwalk through a webinar presentation and not really have your stuff in order. You really can't survive with that anymore. However, if you have a really tight, dialed in, effective webinar, it will reach and sell more people today than at any point in time prior in history that a webinar could perform at. So it's good if you do it good. It's bad if you do it bad.
Why is it the case? What made this change?
Yeah, two major things. One is we can reach more people than ever online. In the capabilities in targeting and mechanisms and technology, all of that stuff just means simply that there are more people that we can reach sooner, quicker, easier, more efficiently, more effectively. The downside to that is there are more competitors that are also trying to reach those people because the stakes are higher. And we used to, for example, not have to worry too much about webinar slides. Like, yeah, we'd put 50, 100 on a webinar and that'd be good enough. These days, if there's not enough movement and activity on a webinar, you lose people's attention. So you got to step your design game up a little bit. Now, the good news is the technology makes that easier than ever, but people are still working this old paradigm because they're modeling webinars they've seen in 2015 or 2017, and they think everything about them needs to be the same. But the way people have interacted and experienced webinars from then until now and the expectations they have with online content in general has drastically changed. Like, here's the biggest thing. People back in the day could get by selling information that was scarce. Nowadays, that same information is freely available on podcasts and YouTube. So people that haven't updated the game and want to sell like a secret piece of information that I'm going to hold back from you that you can only get access to after you pay me money, they're suffering these days because there's a lot of really great information for free that nobody's charging for. So if you haven't updated your model to account for that, it's going to be a tough time.
How about getting people to show up or register on the webinar? Because now we're talking about the conversion element. So yep. That assumes that people are already there. Which yep. means, okay, you got to step up your slide game. We're going to talk about that in more details later. But how about the marketing part of how has that changed?
Oh, they're totally not showing up as much as a percent. But again, as a whole, I don't really care about show rates as a percent. If I get more eyeballs overall through my offers, I'm a happy boy. And we're able to do that these days. At the same time, I've always ran a campaign-focused webinar model. It's not predicated on them having to only show up in order to make sales. We have follow-up sequences, replays that we deploy, a lot of stuff that frankly, a lot of people have trouble understanding and using, like because I've kind of coaching them and trying to help them. So we don't optimize only for the point of sale on the webinar. The webinar is the tent pole in the promotion. It's like the middle point. So they show up or they don't show up. We have follow-ups for them in place so that by the end of the campaign, with the webinar being the anchor point of the campaign, we can reach more people and we can make more sales. But if we're trying to measure success based on old metrics, old show rates, old opt-ins, it's just an unfair comparison. Instead, we have to look at lead cost and value of lead after the campaign is concluded. How much am I making for every single person that opts in from the beginning of my funnel to the end of my funnel? And we can get more opt-ins. And so if we can get more opt-ins and we can make some money off those opt-ins and the value per subscriber is there, and then we multiply that because we get so many more subscribers, awesome. That is something I'm totally into. And that's what we're seeing with our webinars for us and for our clients is if you do it right, it's bigger than ever. But you have to be more precise and more exact these days than you used to be back in the day.
Yeah, I can see your point because you're not seeing the webinar as the as the only moment for conversion. And that's where a lot of people stop. It's like, okay, I got a webinar. I got my presentation. Great. And right, so then it's like, okay, the webinar can be the point of conversion, but if the conversion doesn't happen there, then we are seeing the full system as a whole. We are saying, okay, how do we get people to see the presentation, maybe on a replay? How do we get people to consume different pieces of content around it and bring them back to the webinar or to the offer itself? Because ultimately, the webinar is designed to sell an offer, which leads me to the next point of change that I wanted to ask you, because we looked at what changed in the presentation game, what changed in the registration game. One of the things you talk a lot about is the offer. I think that probably you have more content around offer creation and around webinars around or a bit of a mix, but how about the offer part? How has it changed and before compared to now, and in terms of what people are actually buying?
It's first of all, the offer is the most important component of the whole webinar. The webinar is you swinging the axe, and the offer is how sharp the axe is to cut down the tree. So I want a sharp axe before I start swinging it. So to me, the offer is everything. I don't think that's changed over time. I think the same mechanics that I used to develop offers in 2010 work just the same in 2025. I think people misunderstand the offer more than anything. And what we always try to do when we launch a new product is have an offer where the value of it is so absurdly high compared to the price, and is something that the audience can't compare other things to. Then we know we're on the right track. Like, I don't want my offer to be something you can say, well, so and so's got a similar offer. Then they can price me along the lines that so and so's offer is priced at. But if I can develop an offer that is incomparable to other people, then the only comparison they have is to my ability to sell it. So when I start out, before I do anything, I want to come with the strongest offer possible. The analogy I give here is like if I'm a chef and you give me really bad ingredients, like you pulled some stuff out of the trash and you put it on the table and say, cook me a meal. It's not going to be very tasty. So before I cook, I want the best ingredients possible. The offer are those ingredients. And I think from a technological standpoint, these days it's easier to develop the different offer components that have high value and put them together in really cool, interesting, and efficient ways that used to be a lot harder in the past. So in this way, if you understand offer creation and offer positioning, you have such a bigger advantage today, I think, than even in the heydays of internet marketing, so to speak. I think that is really what people need to get good at.
What example come to mind, for example, of something that maybe a client that you worked with, that you saw their offer and you're like, huh, we can put some changes here. And then you made some changes and the offer converted exponentially more.
Yeah, very often what we do is Well, let's just break down the economics here of what's at stake in terms of an offer. Like, what are the components? You have the core portion of the offer, you have the price, you have the bonuses, you have the risk, and then you have the scarcity. So when I'm thinking of an offer, I'm thinking of those five things. The mistake most people make when making an offer is they put all of it in the core. So they say, here's everything you get, and now here's the price for it. I'll give you the very best example of this as an offer ship that I've ever seen. So I used to sell a lot of software on webinars way back in the day. We're talking 2010, 2011. And I wrote a little book called Webinar Pitch Secrets. And in that book, I talked about the idea of what we found is if we made the software a bonus and then we put something else that they paid for, we would sell more of the software if we made the software a free bonus versus making the software the main thing. And the reasoning behind that is the software has a high value that you can perceive it as. So, like, say you have a $200 a month software. And if I give you 12 months of that, that's $2,400 in actual retail value. And if I give that to you for free when you buy a $1,000 training program, that's already sounding like an incredible deal. The only thing that you might worry about is the catch, like, is this legit or not? Which is better than, oh, there's not a lot of value here. But it gets even better than that. The issues you would have selling software normally would be, does it work on a Mac? Does it work on a PC? How do I log in? How do I do this? You bypass all that when you make it free because that's just an extra thing that they get. So they're less concerned about the details. Even better is if you're selling SaaS-based software, they say, well, what happens after, 12 months? Do I just get billed every single month? Now we don't have to worry about that anymore because we're not selling it month to month. So they're not worried if they buy on month one, what will happen on month two, right? In addition to that, if the software has multiple tiers and multiple usage levels, which level should I sign up for? If I'm selling the software as a main thing, it gets complicated. So I was breaking this down, and a guy named Russell Brunson read this book. And prior to reading this book, he was trying to sell ClickFunnels, like straight up as a software. And then he shifted the webinar presentation to make ClickFunnels the free bonus you got when you bought his traffic course. So the traffic would teach you how to drive it to the funnels, and then the software for free would allow you to convert the traffic. And that was the difference between them struggling to break even on an offer. And then now I don't know what they're worth, nine plus figures as
Yeah,
a, as a.
they are killing it, right?
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
I remember seeing the shift. I remember seeing the
Yep.
shift with them in their marketing and in their webinars. What we were doing, where now suddenly the software became the bonus. And
Software became the bonus. Yeah. And that came directly from what I understood and learned about and then taught as offer strategy, I think back in, I don't know when, it was quite a while ago, right?
It was a while ago. I don't remember when they made that shift. What I'm hearing you saying is one is the most valuable part of the offer, making them a bonus. But there is something also deeper than that, which is that also making a bonus the part that takes away the most decision-making power.
Yeah, we try to make bonuses, and I think the bonuses are more important than the main thing you sell. So a lot of people put everything in the main thing they sell. They have no real attractive bonuses. They have nothing because they put all their best stuff. So they didn't save the best for last. So that's already a problem. So they don't have a really good bonuses because they put too much into the core portion of the offer. But the other thing bonuses or some of the other things bonuses should do, because I have a whole bunch of things I try to do with the bonuses. Is to kill an objection. So I like to think of one bonus per major objection. So if you put everything in an offer, it's kind of like this. If I gave you a document, I wrote you an email one day and it had some really important information in it, and I bolded every single word in the email, that did not increase your understanding and comprehension of that email. It decreased it. If you emphasize too many things, the result is nothing gets emphasized. So, unfortunately, when most people sell a product, like they put it all in the core main portion of the offer, only one or two things can be emphasized there. So, if you have some really good, really important stuff and it's all lumped together into one core offer, you can only emphasize two or three things when there might be six or seven or eight awesome things. So you can't have an offer that says, let me, give you the Xacto 2964, which also does this, and it also does, you just to say the sentence would take too long to get it out of your mouth, you'd run out of breath. But if you have the core part of the offer, which highlights one or two or three things, and then the first bonus highlights another thing separately, and then the next bonus highlights yet another thing on top of that, it's like you're shining spotlights at different very important things. And by pulling them from the product and making them their own thing, this just dramatically increases the value. And it also decreases the risk because some of these bonuses are directly and specifically attacking individual objections that, this percentage of the market has this major objection, so let's kill it. This percentage over here has this major objection, so let's kill that. So when we used to sell a lot of Amazon training stuff, in our bonus package, we'd have an offer that was called a China Concierge Program, where we would have people that we would send to China to find products, samples on your behalf, and test the quality of them and negotiate with the manufacturers of said product. Because a huge objection that my audience had was they felt that they were at an unfair advantage if they weren't going to fly all the way over to China, but they didn't want to fly all the way over to China. So this is how we solve that objection with a bonus. Now, if I just lump that in the main program, if I said, hey, you get a training program and you get a China concierge to help you select products, that doesn't double or triple the value. That just, it maybe 10% increases the value. But by pulling it out, make it separate and making it a big deal and being like, these done for you services typically cost $1,000 or more per month and you get it for free. They're like, ooh, I just got $1,000 for free. Versus if I put it all in the product, it's, yeah, I'm paying whatever for the whole product. So the psychology is very powerful there. And then we would have another bonus, which was software that helped them unlock and discover product opportunities. Because a huge objection is, hey, buy this program, what if I can't find a product to sell? Then I can't be successful. Yeah. Now we had training videos, we had documentation, we had all the normal stuff you would put in there to help people select products. But instead of also adding a software into the main offer that made it even easier for you to find products, we pull that out. That becomes a separate thing. So when you buy the training program, you also get a software. Ooh, I like software. You also get a done for you service. Oh my God, a done for you service. And pretty soon, again, you can see how the value stack just starts to really overload because we've strategically pulled out and made things certain bonuses. And a lot of people just don't think that way. And these bonuses have inherent value to them. They have high retail established value related to them. And they smash objections completely. And we're shining spotlights on each of these objections. So these are just some of the many things that we can do to make offers really pop out on our
I love
webinars.
it. So first of all, everyone right now, like take notes, jot it down, because this is will dramatically increase your conversion on the webinars by just positioning the bonuses in the right way and not checking like a PDF that with 180 pages that you wrote 5 years ago and you have that in your hard drive and you're like, oh yeah, that would make a nice bonus so I can get rid of it. No, that's not what great bonuses are. I wanted to. I'm gonna talk more. We're gonna talk more about the like what makes also a great webinar in terms of conversion and presentation. But before we
Yep.
get there, I'm curious to hear your moment that hooked you on webinars because I remember mine. It was I used to do 3 day in person events. So I used to have like a seminar business. That was before COVID and before we moved everything on the webinar space. So it was a free event to 3 day event to high ticket. That was my business model for about 7 years. And then COVID hit. And we're like, okay, no more events. And I played and dabbled with webinars before, but until then it wasn't doing much because my core business was live events. And then at some point, we're like, okay, we gotta do them. And the first 8 webinars, I used to make a lot of sales from platform. The first 8 webinars, I made 0 sales, and I was like, "What's going on here? This is a different game." That was my come to Jesus moment, like a come to reality moment. Like this is a different game. And then I did a webinar, and I think fixing the offer was a big thing. And we made the same amount of money on that webinar in 1 hour that I made on the free event without having venue costs. So I think we made about, like, on the front end, about 15,000 on that webinar. And I was like, huh, okay, this is it. I'm all in. And since then, I never looked back and run about like 100 webinars a year now. What was your this is it moment?
Great question. It's so different for me because I started doing webinars around 2008. So nobody was doing them back then. So I was just kind of exploring it as a new territory. I had previous to that really only sold products as ebooks and as video programs, and only had sold products that were $27, $37. And then one day I attend a webinar. Somebody was training on personal help. I think it was Eben Pagan. So, hey, I'm doing this webinar. Come and watch. We're going to teach you communication models. So he had like a guest that was speaking on that. So I attended as a just somebody who wanted to learn. And I was like, wow, this is such a superior format to communicate and help and support clients versus other types of formats at the time. So I'm like, I want to try that. So I go to my audience. I had a list of about 3,000 people that had bought product from me. Again, not a lot in terms of dollar amount, but they were good clients. And I said, hey, I got this new idea. I've been wanting to teach people about my time management strategies. And I just saw this new thing called a webinar. I want to try it in that. So if you'll come to this webinar I'm running, I'll give you the recording for free. Now, if you don't come, I'll sell you the recording later because I'm going to create a product in real time on this webinar because I think this is the best way that I can teach you and improve your capabilities. But let's see, let's find out. So I just said, come join me on this experiment. Now, Simone, we get 17 people to show up for the thing. So, not a lot of people. But I've always taken the attitude of these are 17 souls. If I can change somebody's life, that's got to be good. So, I trained and I taught on that webinar for hours on a mind map, walking them through everything that I could teach them that I did to make me productive. And I had five people write me very heartfelt testimonials as a result of that, how much it impacted them. And that made me feel really good. So I'm like, I got something here with this new webinar technology. So my next step above that is I took an ebook that I wrote that was $17 that I sold for and a 12-step process. So I was teaching people how to write sales letters in 12 steps. So I went back to the audience and said, man, that last webinar thing was really cool. I want to do a coaching program where I deliver essentially the same information I taught in the ebook, but I want to do it over a series of webinars. So there was 12 steps, 12 webinars, one step per webinar. Yeah, I'm going to only do a few people. I think I took 14 people in or maybe 24 people. I can't remember because it was a while ago. But I sold it for $300, something like that. So significantly more expensive than anything I'd ever sold in my life, like 10x. And we sold the whole thing out. And I was like, oh my God, this is awesome. And then I did 2 hour sessions per week for 12 weeks straight, AKA 24 hours. So at this point in time, I've never pitched on a webinar yet, but I've put in about 28 hours of time on webinars just purely training. So I like the model of fulfillment via webinar, not sell, but fulfill. So then the evolution of that, I started calling these e-classes. So I said, okay, I can do the same thing. I can take another PDF that I created, turn that into a series of coaching webinars. And now the aha moment was, what if I use a webinar to sell a series of webinars? Then it's real simple. I just got to demonstrate that I'm capable of giving aha moments on a webinar. And then essentially the sell is, did you like that? Would you like to do several more of these where we can go even more in depth? If so, I'm running a new coaching program. It starts here very soon. So you got to sign up before it starts. And I'm going to take a handful of people through this process. And God, that was awesome. So I started selling these little $500 e-classes. I put 50 to 100 people in them, train them over a series typically of 6 weeks per class, and then often sell the next class. I would sell them from one class to the next class. And I would continue to pick up people from one class to another. And I would write webinars to pitch the next class. So I had a gradualization of skills. Most people, and this is a problem they have in this business, is they want to start from white belt day one, fight the black belt in the dojo on their first karate lesson. They don't progress like I progressed. So then after selling a webinar, using a webinar to sell a series of webinars, then I started experimenting selling other things. And that's how I got really good. But I was able just to win on a small level, lock it in, expand to the next level, win there, lock it in, expand it. There's this saying that people, they overestimate what they can do in a year and they underestimate what they can do in 10. And so I was just making small wins that compounded over time. And then I woke up one day and I was the best in the world at webinars.
That's an incredible mindset that I want everyone to adopt here that is watching or listening, because as you mentioned, you gradually grew your skills because there are so many skills that are involved into creating a webinar sales. Like you have cr offer skills, then you gotta have presentation skills, then the slides, then the software, then the speaking to camera. Then, like, there is so many micro skills that you are improving and using at any given time that when you see, I want to start and I want to make all this money from webinars, but I've never run a Zoom call before. It's like, maybe just do one to get started and something is gonna shift. I'm curious what your take is. Is it more important what you say in the presentation or how you say during the presentation? Is the presenter and the skill as a presenter more important than what the actual presenter says? Because there are people that can sell just based on charisma and presentation skills. And there are people that can actually need that. So what's your take on it?
Yeah, how you say it is way more important than what you say. This drives my clients nuts because I'll give them some material sometimes. I'll be coaching and be like, okay, this is how I'd set this up. And then I'll rattle something off. And they'll be like, can you repeat that? And I'll go, no, because I don't remember what I just said. So then I'll try it again and I'll say it a different way. And what I emphasize to them is, by the way, less important is how you say it or what you say. Most important is the underlining technique used in your communication strategy. That is more important than either what you say and how you say it. And I can give examples of what I mean by
Yeah,
this. I was just doing a
let's expand on that.
consult with the client right before our call, and he sells this program to accountants, like how to be a fractional CFO. That's essentially what his offer is. And I told him that the biggest friction point that would stop them from buying into the idea and therefore buying into the offer is their belief in their ability to be a fractional CFO, because they're an accountant, they're not a CFO. Oh my God, CFO, that conjures up very intimidating images of these, fancy whiz-bang CFOs for Fortune 500 companies. So I was demonstrating to him in the content portion of his webinar how you could go about setting that up. Now, the technique I was using was more important than what I was saying, because here's the technique that I was using. I wanted the audience to feel that I wanted the insecurity that they have. Am I qualified to do this? Am I capable of doing this? I wanted to get around that, not by like directly attacking it, but shifting the perspective to here's all these other businesses out here are suffering right now because they can't afford to hire a full-time CFO, but they don't know a fractional CFO exists. So you can let these businesses suffer and not get paid, or you can help these businesses and get paid. So I wanted to shift the focus of the audience on the unbelievable suffering that they're allowing to occur in a marketplace that they can easily fix. And I was explaining to the client, it's like, well, if you do a good enough job of that, there's no room left over for their feelings of inadequacy of I'm not good enough, I don't know what to say to start the conversation, I'm not a CFO, blah, 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 blah. So whatever words I was giving him to use to satisfy that were less important than the underlining technique. And that's a technique is shift the problem from the user to somewhere else so they don't think about the problem anymore. I'll give you one more example utilizing the same technique in a different context. A lot of people are so afraid of advertising on Facebook. Like if you're starting a new business and you're trying to get them up and going and selling on Facebook. So they focus so much on what if I spend too much money, and what if my ads don't work? And that's a very selfish perspective. That's all me, 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 right? So we shifted to what if there's a person who you could save by reaching out to them and you choose not to reach out to them, right? Well, there's, is there 100 people you think out there right now that if you could somehow connect with them, this would be such a win in their life? How do we find those 100 people? And they're like, well, I could use Facebook advertising. Brilliant idea, right? And now I'm not telling them to do it. I'm helping them discover what they can do and then affirming it and validating it. So until you understand these persuasion techniques and patterns, that is a priority to me. And then once you knock them in, then how you communicate them, that's the next most important thing. And then the last important things is the exact precise specific words that you use to communicate them to the audience. So
Right,
start
okay.
with the technique first. Yep.
Start with the technique, then how you say it, then what exactly you're going to say it. That will
Yep.
be the right order. And I never heard it in this way because a lot of time, either depending on where people start, people will start either this is what to say, and then you get better at it, or get better at speaking, and then you finalize what to say. But actually, understanding these frameworks and understanding the framing become the most important thing.
Yep.
I'd love to know, building on this now, what else? So we had already like quite a lot of great conversation and insights in this webinar about what take a webinar from good to great. We talk about the offer, the positioning of the bonuses, the framing, your presentation skills, persuasion techniques and strategies. What else would you say? And you can take it wherever you want. I say, think about the work of your clients that you have. What else would you say will make a webinar from good to great?
Yeah, it's this is what I love about webinars is it's so context dependent. So if I have 10 clients and I analyze all of their models, I might give 10 different pieces of advice depending upon the client, right? So for some clients, the thing that will make their webinar great is repetition, just delivering it over and over again with small quality of life improvements from one presentation to the next. That's the least recommended way, by the way, that I suggest. But sometimes I just need to lock the material in and we need to practice it and make small improvements over a period of time through repetition. So for that client, that might make sense. For another client, it's we look at it and we say, hey, listen, instead of trying to make one webinar do all the work, we should use two webinars. What a novel concept. Simone, it still blows my mind these days that people just don't create a second webinar in their funnel. So we say, okay, cool. We've hammered it from this one perspective and we made this one major point. What if we come at it from another perspective? Same offer, same audience. The close is almost exactly the same, but the setup to get them to the close can differ completely. So when I was doing the Amazon stuff, we would have two webinars. Webinar one would essentially be the overview of the model. This is how you can get started selling on Amazon. Webinar number two would be a zoom in on one specific part of the model, which is how you launch products on Amazon that immediately get attention, eyeballs, and sales. And so webinar two was all about that one thing that mattered the most in success. Webinar number one was the overview of the model itself. And so if people didn't buy on webinar number one, we would come back with webinar number two and shine the focus on what we felt was the biggest constraint related to the model. And then we would pick up a whole bunch of other sales. We would also use a third webinar, by the way, which was what we call an objection smashing webinar. So in these campaigns, as it approached cart close date, because these were launch style campaigns, we'd say, hey, listen, the cart closes tomorrow. So whether you want to buy it or not, by tomorrow at 11:59 p.m. Pacific time, it's off the market. The bus leaves. You're either on or you're off. So let's figure out if you should get on the bus or not. So come to this webinar, and there's going to be no content on it. We're just going to sit here, bring every hard question you have, and we're going to determine if it should be a yes or a no for you to invest in this product. And we'd have people show up to these webinars and we'd spend 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 hours sometimes doing nothing more but closing and handling objections. It's just selling the whole entire time. So we had three different webinars in one campaign, depending upon the state of mind of the prospect, where they were at in that process of the campaign, instead of trying to get one webinar to do more than it's capable of doing. So the other thing I always do is look at what happens before and after the webinar. What are we doing before the webinar occurs to put people in the best state of mind to show up to the webinar? And then what is happening after the webinar, and what should we do in order to maximize that? Yeah. So for most of my clients, we fix things outside of the webinar itself. It's funny because they're trying so hard to increase the webinar power, but I look at the numbers, I'm like, it's converting really good. It'd be very hard to improve this. And there's a good chance that anything you change would decrease conversion more than increase conversion. So what is the safer bet? Well, what do we put in front of it? What do we put after it? By the way, let's use our thinking caps. I do this with clients all the time. Sometimes they upsell a higher ticket, more personalized version of the product on the back of it. I'm like, why don't we sell them side by side? So while they're on the webinar, can't you have your guys reach out to them on your team and say, hey, listen, if you need any help as this webinar is going on, I'm your personal concierge touch point on this. So if you need anything, let me know. And if that person starts asking them questions that are interesting, screw selling them a $500 product, pop them on a call and sell them the $5,000 product right there on the spot. So, breaking linear processes out and making them nonlinear, making things occur simultaneous. So these are how I analyze holistically all these different webinars, and there's so much leverage in them, which is why I always just shake my head because people are focusing so much on the minutiae and on the tactical portion of the webinar, but we want to start on the strategy first. And then after we exhaust strategy, then we can move tactically. So tactically is improving a webinar, strategy is adding a second webinar.
Is adding the second webinar, is adding. I love the idea of the concierge that can text, like in that moment, and say, hey, if you have any question. So it's literally about increasing the opportunities for conversations, for conversions, while basically keeping the same thing if you already have something that works.
Yeah, it's just, and by the way, people get tunnel vision. It's not the webinar. I don't care about the webinar, right? The webinar is a mechanism to increase conversion. It is one of many mechanisms, but there are other leverage points that we can wrap around and use with the webinar. Like another silly one, this is really funny, is do you use a VSL? No, why not? We should also add a VSL to the funnel at some point in time. But if your webinar sucks, you got to fix that first. But once you nail that, yeah. And another simple optimization point is I look at bonuses in an offer as employees, and they better be holding their weight. Otherwise, they will be fired and replaced. So, who's the lowest performing employee, quote unquote, in the bonus stack?
Get out.
Let's see if we can replace them with a better bonus. And so over time, as I improve, over time, as the offer works, as we know the webinar works, I'm trying to enhance the deliverables even further. I'm now able to spend more money to create better deliverables. I'm able to spend more time now to de develop deliverables that would took too long just to ship the thing and get it out the door. I'm able to start making deals with third parties to incorporate their stuff in my deliverables. What to speak of increasing my guarantees? I can start now testing better than money back guarantees, that kind of stuff. So people will lock an offer in and then sell it, and then they will not update the offer over a period of time. And I'm constantly on the hunt with how do we increase the value of the deliverables by making better deliverables after we get the thing out the door. You can't do too much up front because then you'll never launch the thing. So launch the thing, ship it, get it out the door, and then go to war with the existing value you have in your offer stack. How do we make this better? How do we increase another bonus? And by the way, if it don't work, you pull the bonus out and you put the other one back in.
And you replace it back, and
You replace it back. Yeah.
you go back to what you had before. I have one more question before we wrap up, which is the dilemma that quite a few people have. I'd love to hear your take on it. A live webinar versus evergreen webinar. I'm sure you get this question a lot. So, Jason, over to you on this one.
So if you haven't launched any webinar ever, then my answer is whatever one you can get done the fastest, because it's just get something live. Now, if you're having some experience with webinars, then the next question is which one best suits the business model that you work in? So in a lot of instances, if you're running paid advertising to an automated webinar works better than paid advertising to a live webinar, because you can then let the ads get optimized over time. And you can keep having Facebook, for example, improve those and you run automation to those. Now, here's the caveat with that. Automated webinars typically mean you have to sell lower ticket products. So if you don't have lower ticket products in your offerings, if you only have like $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 products on the front end, in most markets, that's going to be very difficult to sell on an automated webinar. So you either have to create a lower level $300 to $500 entry point, sell that and then get the customer and then upsell them later. Or you're probably going to have to do a live webinar. Now, there's also lifestyle considerations as well. Some people have a lifestyle where they enjoy doing things live and they get excited about it and they want to do it. Other people can't stand the idea of ever doing anything live. So we would optimize it based on lifestyle considerations as well. Here's the one thing I will suggest to people that they won't like to hear, but it's in their best interest. I approach scripting and creating an automated webinar very different than than a live webinar. I don't look at them as the same thing or even similar. I look at them as two completely different type of media with two different approaches. The end result may look similar to the glancing eye, but there are some dramatically different procedural things that I do if I'm creating an automated webinar versus a live webinar, which we can talk
Why is that? Why is
about.
that? Like, I think it's important to understand why. Like, what's the difference? Because I think some people, they just say, well, it's a webinar, right?
So one of the major differences is automated webinars almost wholly, the way that people run them is in a web browser. When people are watching stuff in a web browser, they behave differently than when they're watching it in a program like Zoom. The bounce rates are significantly higher in web browsers. The distractibility is significantly higher in web browsers. And then there's just technically, things that are more difficult to do in a web browser than there is in somewhere like Zoom. Like if I'm doing call responses in Zoom, hey, listen, I got a question. I want to know your answer. Go ahead and type it into the chat right now. I have way more technique that I can play with on that when I'm doing that live than I can do it when I'm automating the thing, for example. Even something as simple as scarcity. I can do more with scarcity on a live webinar than I could on an automated webinar. And so we have to optimize differently due to those considerations. Generally, people that come into an automated webinar because it's so easy for them to get into it, easy come, easy go. So we better have a very interesting disruptive hook at the beginning of an automated webinar. It's less important to have that during a live webinar because you have their attention because they showed up and they made time for it. So the hooks that I would use on live webinar are different than the hooks that I would use on automated webinars. I'll give you one really stupid example here. We have our clients record the beginning of their automated webinar and then edit it to cut it off mid-sentence on the first sentence that they say. So when somebody joins the automated webinar room, they're joining it as it's already happening. Mid-sentence, right? Now that's done intentionally. That's an example. There's other things that we can use too as a way to hook them in. So they're like, hey, what just happened?
What did
If
I
you do it,
miss? Like the brain
yeah,
is
what did
like,
I
what did I
miss?
miss?
Yeah,
Let me pay attention now.
I gotta pay attention now. What just happened? I gotta check this out. And we use way more open loops, especially at the beginning of the presentation. You can get away with this. It blows my mind this is still a thing, but you can get away with this on a live webinar. You could say, hey, at some point very early on in the presentation, you could say, hey, and if you stick to me with me till the end, I'm gonna give you this free gift. I'll show you the download at the end. And that works reasonably well. It's like a C plus open loop, but it works pretty well for the effort involved to get people hooked to the end just for a bribe. That does not work hardly at all on an automated webinar. So you have to use more open loops, and they have to be better open loops than that if you're going to do an automated webinar. The stick rate on an automated webinar is a lot less. So we want to get the offer in at about 45-ish minutes if we're doing an automated webinar. If we're doing a live webinar, 60 to 75 minutes is preferable in most instances. So I got to get the offer in sooner. I teach less on automated webinars as a result of that. than I would on a live webinar. I do more problem agitation on an automated webinar than I do on a live webinar. We do a lot more editing for automated webinars. No ums, no ahs, cut points in between slides so there's no pauses there. And then we generally speed it up 6 to 10% depending upon the cadence of the presenter because we've tested it. And on automated webinars, you can generally speed it up 7, 8% and get it and increase the conversion rate. So automated webinars are generally more about the funnels because we can spend more time on the funnels and less about the presentation itself. So they look very similar on the outside looking in, but to me, I approach them as two different completely animals. So if I'm writing for one, then I write this way. If I'm writing for another, then I write that way. Now, here's a caveat in this. If you're in a market where you're one, if not the only webinar presenter, then it doesn't matter. You're in a blue ocean, my friend. Savor it. Get the most out of it you can, because all blue oceans turn red eventually, right? So there are exceptions to this rule. Like if you're swimming in blue oceans and you're a one of one or a one of few, or you're the only one doing a good webinar in that space, then the idea is to get as many eyeballs on that as humanly possible. But most of us swim in red waters. And so these are ways that we can stand out and have our automated webinars win. Me personally, I know way more. I have developed way more technique that's more effective for a live webinar, and I really enjoy teaching. I love it. Like, here's what you can do with a live webinar you can't do with an automated webinar. I do live objection handling, and I'll do it for 100 people in a row. What's your objection? Okay, answer. Next. What's your objection? Okay, answer. Next. I do one-to-one
Love
selling
it.
in front of an audience, right?
Yeah, I absolutely love it. What I love about your content and the way you position, there are a couple of things. One, I mean, more than a couple, but two really stood out for me. One, which is your attitude of always looking for the finer details. What you're showing with these interviews, there are levels to this game. And you can go layer below layer below layer. After you have that presentations, going from the offer to the marketing to the sales to the difference between live and automated webinars. And so for you, having the discipline, the passion, the attention to detail to go and study and be a student of what really works and test over hundreds of webinars, that's what makes you really unique in your field. And then the second part, which is what I respect you a lot for, is that you will see every webinar and every industry in a different way. Because the one template that works for every single webinar, that's unfortunately a dream that very difficultly comes true. It works for certain industry, works for certain personalities, works for certain products. But ultimately, you are unique as a presenter, you are unique as a business, you are unique as what you believe in, what you're selling. And so going into creating something that works for you, going down to your lifestyle, what kind of lifestyle do you want to have? You know, is someone like me that runs like 100 live webinars a year because I love doing that? Or are you someone that, you know, if you do one, two live webinars a year, okay, and you optimize everything for evergreen? Like that makes a lot in terms of the decision. Tell us a bit more about your book One Too Many, because I know we told quite a few things, but there is way more for where this information came from. So tell us a bit more about the book One Too Many that anyone can find in the show notes or in the description. Just scroll down, you can get the link right now.
Yeah, it is the most thorough book ever written on webinars. Has the most strategy jam-packed in the book that you could ever find. It probably and it's produced more success stories for certain with webinars than any book has ever put out there. And get ready for the big price reveal. It's a $9 Kindle book. Da, 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 da. You can get it on Amazon.
Bonuses? No.
There's bonuses in there too. Yeah, actually. And when you buy the book, there's like a bonus where you can see one of my highest performing webinars of all time in action, and some other cool bonuses in there as well.
So make sure you get a book. I read it. Highly, highly, highly recommended. That's the reason why I asked you to be on this podcast, because I've been following your work for years. Absolutely love the way what you teach and also the way you teach and the mindset around it. So thank you for your work. I'm looking forward to seeing what other products or services, books you're going to release. And everyone who has been watching, listening this episode, make sure you get scroll down to the show notes, get the book One Too Many, do it right now. Jason, any final word before we wrap up?
Just get the webinars going and find people to serve, and I think you'll be okay.
Yeah, get the webinars going, find people to serve. All right, Jason, thanks again. Thanks for being part of this interview. Thank you for your time. Everyone who is watching, listening, thank you for being here. Make sure you subscribe if you haven't subscribed yet, and also leave us a review. They're really important for the podcast, so make sure you give it now. It's good for the guest, it's good for the show, it's good for my ego, it's good for everyone. So make sure you get it done, a good 5-star. And with this, until next time, remember that together we grow exponentially. See you next time. Ciao. Thank you for listening to Explode Your Expert Business Show. If you enjoyed the interview, please subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Every week we will select a winner from the reviews that we get. So it might be you. Make sure you give us a review. It means the world to us, and that's how you can help us grow the show. Also remember to download the Expert Business Checklist to get the roadmap on how to become an authority in your field. The link is in the show notes, or you can visit gtex.events/expert-iPhone-checklist. So it's gtex.events/expert-iPhone-checklist. And as well, finally, if you want to receive daily support in your coaching and speaking business, or explore how we can work together, join our private Facebook group, Explode Your Expert Biz. Again, you can find it on Facebook at Explode Your Expert Biz, or the link is in the show notes. Thank you very much for listening, and until next time, remember that together we grow exponentially.